What do you do to encourage your students to compose or explore more creativity? Have you thought about incorporating more composition into your teaching? And what about yourself? Have you tried composing but struggled with ideas or execution? Today's guest is Evan Hunter, a composer and piano teacher who loves storytelling. We talk about how stories can stimulate compositional ideas for you and your students. He gives advice on how to get started with composition so it's not so scary for students. Like doodling on paper or playing with Legos, curiosity is an important factor. Once you know you're allowed to just play around, it's much easier to let go and see what you create. During this episode, Evan shares one of his pieces, Light Showers. He reads the story and we listen to the music, which is gorgeous. You're listening to The Piano Sensei Way, a podcast for piano teachers who own a studio business and want less stress and more success. Welcome to The Piano Sensei Way. I'm your host, Clinton Pratt, and I am here to help you master the art of running a successful piano teaching studio. We're happy to have Evan Hunter as a guest today. So welcome, Evan, and tell everybody where you are and what you teach.
Hello, my name is Evan Hunter. My father and I own a commercial studio in the Midwest. We teach a method called Simply Music, an Australian-developed approach, although actually we have multiple instruments in our studio, but we use Simply Music for piano, and then a method called Play a Story for younger pianists, about ages 4 to 6. My specialty, I guess if you could call it that, is composing. I write a lot of music for my church. I've written written orchestral music. I like writing for wind band, but I just love composing generally. I love being creative, and I love bringing out that creativity in my students. It just brings me a lot of joy to see.
Great. Yeah, that's great to hear. And you mentioned your father. So obviously he's musical, but tell us more about your musical upbringing. You know, was your both of your parents musical? Did you start lessons at an early age? What does that look like?
Actually, my musical upbringing, it may be a little bit unusual among musicians. I know my mom took lessons when she was a child, but then stopped when she was an adult. She's not a musician. My dad tried lessons a couple of times in life, and it didn't work out. His background is more of an engineering background, if you can believe that. I got started as a musician, actually not even as a piano player. I started as a trumpet player when I was about 11 or 12. I can't really remember. I know a lot of my musician friends started when they were about 5 or 6, but I didn't. So I started as a trumpeter and just got hooked on it. I fell in love with it. I couldn't stop practicing and took lessons there and then started piano later. I was maybe a year or two later, maybe later than that. I can't quite remember. I just used the piano as a creative tool, mainly. My training was not in being a concert pianist or anything of that nature. So from there, I kept playing piano and trumpet. I sort of fell into composing. I just always heard music in my head. I was inspired by film soundtracks like John Williams, James Horner, Jerry Goldsmith, all the old great classic ones. And I thought, I want to sound like that. I just love the epic sweeping sound. And of course, I had no idea what I was doing compositionally. So I just kind of winged it. But then got some really good guidance from my teachers, ended up majoring in composition, got a degree in it, and got into teaching thereafter. But that's a bit of a different story.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I love all the film music and John Williams and all that as well. One of my favorite CDs that I owned was Cincinnati Pops Orchestra playing a bunch of soundtracks. And I loved it. And actually, coming up soon, I'm going to try to go to the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra. They're doing Jurassic Park. So they're like showing the movie, the whole movie, minus the soundtrack, and the orchestra's playing the soundtrack.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't been to one of those, but I'm super excited because I love film music. And so to have it, you know, be playing live right then is super exciting.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's interesting that you didn't start piano until later, but you did trumpet and then the composition. Then when did you either start teaching piano and music, and how did that come about? Did you even want to do that? Like, was that a career plan or did it just happen?
Well, my initial plan, well, and the typical path for a classical composer these days is you go all the way up to the doctoral level, you get a professorship somewhere, and so you teach courses during the year and then you write during the summers. So that's usually the way it goes. I was on that path. I was getting my undergraduate degree, but around the end of that time, my dad actually decided he wanted to learn to play. Learn to play piano. He had tried a couple of times earlier in life and it didn't work out. But he thought, you know what? I'm going to learn to play this thing no matter what. music doesn't let you go, right? So he found out about this Simply Music method. It's not simply piano. I should say that. It's not the same thing at all. They're often confused with each other. But he found out about it, found a local teacher who since retired, and started taking lessons with her. And after just 3 months of lessons, my sister and I, you know, we're both trained musicians. So we saw him memorizing all this music without even being able to read it. All kinds of different styles, pop, jazz, classical, even composing his own pieces and having fun. And we thought, how is he doing this? This is crazy. And then after a year of lessons, he could play 44 songs by memory, all styles. So we were just blown away. And so we had kitchen table discussions. He talked about the approach with us and how different it was. And we just thought, you know, this other teacher's going to be retiring pretty soon, and no one here is going to be doing this. It was around that same time that I thought, you know, maybe I don't want to go the academic route with my music. I don't want to do the professorship thing. It's going to put me in a lot of student debt to go on for graduate degrees and such. So, you know, what if we started a studio doing this? In a sense, I made my own teaching job. and it was, so we all, you know, we got it started together. That was about 13 years ago. And then even looking back before then, I had I'd always enjoyed tutoring other students. You know, they would ask me for help with their music theory and such. So I would tutor them. And I discovered I really got a kick out of that light bulb moment, you know, when a student had been struggling with something for a long time or felt like they were never going to get it. They couldn't do it. And then you just slip in one little new way of thinking and, oh, I've got it. Oh, this is so easy. And I just really started to love that moment. And before then, I didn't even really see myself as a teacher, but I just discovered I really loved that moment. I loved seeing students build that confidence. And so starting a studio was just the perfect opportunity. 13 years later, it's still great, still going strong, and I'm looking forward to more.
Yeah, I love that. And as far as your studio, you said you teach multiple instruments, right? Or your studio does.
Right. Well, we have multiple instructors. I only teach piano, but we've got instructors on guitar, ukulele, drums, et cetera.
And do you teach composition?
Yes, although I would say I weave it into almost everything I do. Like, nearly all of my students do composition and improv. It's just woven into the curriculum, if I could even call it a composition curriculum. It's I encourage it wherever I can.
Right, right, okay. Let's get into this idea of storytelling and how that influences, you know, either your compositions or your lessons with your students.
Great. how do I even put this? What would you like to know?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, so everybody likes a good story. I wonder if most composers come at it the same way. I don't know. I guess like film music, there's the story and then you write the music to it, right? But if there's no story yet and then you're writing music, so do you still want to come up with a story first? Or do you come up with something musical first and then that reminds you of a story and then you go with that?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, for my process, I guess I'll very briefly describe my process and then go into how it relates to my students. So my process is weird. I don't know any other composers who work this way. It's kind of strange. Maybe there are some. I know throughout history, maybe there have been some. But what I'll do is it's kind of like being an actor. Let's say if I want to write a piece, I have to find the emotional core of the piece. And so I will get in character like an actor. If it's a joyful piece, then I have to get joyful. And so I'll do this. And then the more deeply I get into character, this, forgive me, it's hard to describe the process, mm-hmm. if I can even call it a process. But as I get in character, I start to have this scene playing out in my mind. I don't know where it comes from. It's almost been pointless to try to figure it out for me, but I'll get this movie scene in my head that often will be like a dream. It won't make sense. It will violate the laws of physics flagrantly. It's just kind of its own scene. But then the music will come with it as a soundtrack. But the ideas are very unformed. They're kind of incoherent. I would never just transcribe the entire piece in this rough form and present it. It wouldn't make sense. But I'll transcribe just the salient ideas and maybe the best ideas that stick with me. It might just be a few measures. It might be half of a little tune. It might be a structural idea, a timbre, you know, some kind of orchestral idea. And then I'll take those ideas and start developing them further, and usually develop them into full melodies, themes, develop the structure of the piece. And then it gets more and more structured as the process goes until I've got a complete piece that's coherent and that I can present to an audience. So I suppose it starts with getting in character, or with being like an actor, and with being curious, asking questions like, what if? You know, I'll be sitting at the piano sometimes and maybe I can't quite get in character very well, or I can't get the scene to start coming to me. So I'll mess around with a few notes, or a chord or two in my left hand. And then, oh, what if I do this? What if I go up instead? What if I do G minor instead of E flat major? Just very, very non-directional. And then at some point it lights that spark and then boom, the process begins. So that's more or less how my process works. And then for my students, I find that in my opinion, the most important ingredient in creativity is curiosity. A lot of students start off thinking, well, I can't compose, or I can't improvise, or don't you have to be a musical genius or born with a special talent to compose? Well, no, I actually think it's easier to improvise than to play an existing piece. And maybe that's just me, but I just have to get them curious. I'll ask questions like, you know, you already know this piece that you're playing. You've been playing it for weeks. What if you change the chord in your left hand, or your right hand is going up? What if you go down instead? Or what mm-hmm. if you end it here instead of there? And usually if I just give them a metaphorical push there, it just lights a fire. And then I don't have to do anything. They just go off and they're creative on their own. You know, you don't have to teach a young child how to doodle on a piece of paper or how to play around with Legos. They'll just do it on their own if they know they can do it. And so really I just have to get them started. And then the rest of the process is just sort of guiding them, if I even need to do that. Does this make some kind of sense?
Yeah, it makes great sense. Okay, great. So then how does the storytelling come into it? Or are we just, like, are we talking about literal stories, or is it more of a piece tells a story, so just use your imagination, right?
A bit of both, although for me, the story is the movie scene that I see in my head. Although the scene itself sometimes is unformed as well, or it jumps around from scene to scene, so I might edit that a little bit to make it make sense. Sometimes I'll get just the unformed ideas, and then as I finish the piece, the scene, the full scene comes into view. But as far as the storytelling itself goes, and I should say, sometimes I don't share the story with the audience. Sometimes I just go, you know what, this makes no sense and no one's going to understand it. So I'm just going to share the piece and let them see whatever they see in their heads. They can make their own story. Other times, if I think it's a cool story or it's interesting, then I'll share it. But as far as storytelling itself goes, I also write my own novels and short stories. So I really just see myself as a storyteller, and music is just another language that I use. So I tell stories sometimes with music, sometimes with English, sometimes a bit of both. They're really just two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. So when you're thinking of a story or a scene, and then you're coming up with the music, then I think what you're saying is sometimes you might not know how the story is going to end until you do more of the music.
Yeah. Sometimes that is the way it happens. Or with a couple of the pieces in the collection that you've got, if I remember correctly, I started with just a musical idea. I was just kind of messing around. And then after the piece was done, the scene just came to me all at once, fully formed. Other times, yeah, so it's not a completely rigid process. I don't have to start with the movie scene.
Right. Yeah, I like that. All right, so what if we share one of your pieces with the audience?
Sure.
So we got this piece called Light Showers. Do you want to talk about that and maybe tell a story?
Sure. I'll just read the program notes for the piece. So Light Showers depicts the following scene. A young woman walks outside during a sunny day, clad in a raincoat and carrying an umbrella. Rain begins to fall. Each drop sounds a musical tone as it lands. After a short time, an entire symphony plays around the woman. She smiles, removes her raincoat, and transforms into a little girl wearing a brightly colored dress. She dances in the rain with joyful abandon. As she dances, the same young woman from before watches the girl from a window. Her face wears a melancholy expression, as though she is watching a dream or a memory. The rain stops and the sun returns. The little girl dons her raincoat again, transforms back into an adult, and continues on her way.
Okay. It's absolutely gorgeous. I love it.
Thank you.
And thank you. Yeah, it's just so nice. And I think my favorite part is when it like goes an octave higher or is it two octaves higher? I don't know. And yeah, it's cool too, because that could, like, you might have an idea of what that is supposed to be, you know, as the composer, you're like, oh, this is raindrops or, you know, and, but listeners might have a different idea too, but it's probably the same feeling, you know, or the emotion when it goes up higher. Yeah. It sounds kind of like, maybe that's kind of like the nostalgia or the memory aspect of it.
That is what it is. Yeah.
But like, it also sounds like the rain, but then like when I think of rain, it makes me think of nice memories, which is also nostalgia. So like, it's kind of all the same to me. Yeah, that's cool. Maybe let's also share a little bit of the orchestra version, because you have that as well, right? As far as audio.
Yes.
And then the idea is that you can play the piano part along with that. Is that right?
Yeah, there are play-along tracks as well with the melody removed, but the orchestral version has the melody. That's just for listening.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. Let's listen to that. I wanted to listen to the whole thing, but just for time's sake. Yeah. And I love that. And I'm assuming, you know, this would be very helpful just to listen to it and hear the different instruments and orchestration and, you know, voicing and balance and all that. And then when you play it on the piano, you have that in mind so that you play with more expression and like different tone colors and everything. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, well, I actually hear an orchestra in my head when I'm writing the piano part. So yeah. In a way, I'm actually reverse. You could consider the orchestra version the real version, and then the piano version. Well, I imagine the orchestra version does help the performer in the way you described.
Right. Yeah, I remember one of my teachers would always be talking about orchestration when I was playing a piece, you know, even like Beethoven Sonata or something. She's like, oh, you know, this part, like a flute or something. And sometimes it would annoy me. Like, I didn't like it. I'm like, no, it's not a flute. It's a piano. It's a piano. Like, there's no cellos. I don't know what you're talking about. Right. But yeah, then, you know, obviously once I got it, like, oh yeah, if you imagine it that way, yeah, I'm going to play it different if I'm thinking this is like a light little flute flurry, you know, versus, oh, I'm just playing a scale on the piano. Right. Or like, this is a cello part. I'm going to play it maybe with more warmth of tone and all that. Yeah. But I like that you hear it as an orchestral version. And then piano is like, well, I'm only one person, so I'll just play it on the piano. Right. Yeah. So then the play along, describe that. So does it sound pretty much like the orchestra version?
Yeah, the play-along versions, they are the orchestra versions, but with the melody removed. So, for example, you heard the flute playing the melody in the beginning. That part is gone in the play-along track. So the piano player plays the melody. It's like you're playing along with the orchestra.
Okay. That's nice. That's really cool.
Thank you.
So as far as students go and helping them to compose or tell stories through music, what are some ways you do that?
Yeah, great question. Well, I don't have a composition curriculum, as it were. It's, you know, it's very free form. There are so many directions you can go with composition. But when a student is starting with me, the main thing is just to get them curious. So once they know a few tunes, they've got a few songs under their belt, I'll say, hey, what if you take your right hand, this melody goes up. What if you go down instead? Or what if you change this note or change these two notes, whatever, just little changes to get them to see, oh, this totally changes the sound. Or if I even change this one chord in the left hand, now it's a totally different emotion. The piece used to be joyful. Now it's really dark and dour. And all I had to do was move my left hand. That's generally enough to keep them going for quite a long time. They'll just mess around. That's the way I was as a student. And my teachers didn't even have to tell me, Evan, you have a composition assignment this week, and yeah. you have to follow this rule. I would just mess around on my own. I'd hear a recording and go, oh, I want to learn that tune, but now I want to do my own thing. So I get them doing that. As they get later on, as they get more of a repertoire, they get more fluent on the instrument, particularly if they get more serious about composition, I'll say, all right, well, here's a prompt. You know, oh, do you play video games? Oh, yeah, of course, they all play video games. Okay, I want you to compose some boss battle music for next week. Or, you know, or think of a product you use every day. Think of something you like. Sell me that product by writing a commercial jingle for it. Just little things like that that use the kinds of music they would hear every day out in the real world. Generally, these kinds of prompts are enough to get them going. Even the most, how do I put that? Even students who wouldn't consider themselves creative generally are disabused of that myth after just a couple of weeks of doing this kind of thing. So that's generally enough. And then later on, as they get even more fluent, or if they decide they want to be some kind of professional composer or songwriter, I'll give them more specific prompts. And I'll give them a chord progression or give them a very specific tool I want them to use, kind of like how my college composition teacher did. But that's generally delayed until later when they're already fairly fluent with their own creative process.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I know you did mention earlier, as you were talking about that, how you encourage curiosity and, you know, oh, just change one thing in the piece you already have, you know, change the chord or something. Yeah, that's a great way to ease into it rather than, hey, come up with a whole piece brand new right now, you know? Right. And then, yeah, I like the idea of prompts too. So, yeah, this is all very interesting and inspiring. I think a lot of teachers would like to use these more creative ideas and maybe are afraid, you know, like, oh, well, I'm not really a composer, so can I help my students do that or whatever? But you've given some good ideas. And I'm wondering, what about even more beginners? Like, I know you said once they advance, maybe you give them prompts, like make a video game music or something. But do you have any suggestions or advice for even beginners? You know, I have like a 7-year-old boy and he's like, oh, I want to, you know, make up something. But how do you encourage that or guide that student?
As in they've had no prior playing experience at all. That's what you mean?
Maybe a couple months, like they're in their first year of lessons. So they're playing, you know, and they're doing maybe one hand at a time kind of thing. You know, they can improvise a little bit on black keys or something, and then they want to write a piece.
I see. Well, the method we use, the Simply Music approach, is actually pretty unique in this way, in that it gets students playing with both hands practically from the beginning. So within their first year, they've got a memorized repertoire of 30, 40, 50 songs of all styles, hands together. So they've got a really good vocabulary. Even just after 2, 3, 4 weeks, they've got between 2 and 5 songs usually. So they've got a good amount to work with. So I will just, even from the very beginning, I'll say things like, okay, last week we learned this song. You've got it memorized. You know it really well. Change the left hand. Just change one thing about it. I don't even care what it is. Black key improv is great. Or just take a chord in your left hand. Now add one note in your right hand. Or if they're particularly stubborn, maybe they really don't know what to do. I've had some adult beginners who I would say, yeah, just do something. Just be curious. And they'll go, I literally don't know what to do. I have no idea. And so I'll say, all right, start with one note, literally one note, anything you want. Great. Start with another one. Great. Do another one. And usually after that, they realize, oh, yeah, the keyboard is not something to be afraid of. Oh, I hit a note I didn't like, and I'm still alive. You know, nothing bad happened. Many of them carry these training scars with them from really early in life. So you really just have to get them curious and dispel that fear. And even if once they just start with a few notes or changing one little thing about a song or even one little movie scene in their heads, one little prompt, it's enough to get them going. And then I don't even have to give them much more after that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And maybe encouraging a story.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Or, I have them write a story and then depict it for me.
Or even maybe they don't have an idea of a story first, but they're improvising and they have a little idea, like a musical idea, right? And then you can say, oh, well, what does that sound like? Is that a person or an animal, or is that like something happening in the woods, or, you know, and then like, oh, it sounds like that. Okay, then go with that, right? So it's like the music can influence the story and vice versa, which I think is cool.
The play a story approach for the younger kids does that in particular. It does a great job of connecting the storytelling to music.
Yeah, I'm curious about both of those, actually. So I'll have to look into that more. The Simply Music and the play a story. Yeah.
Yes, they're great. I can't recommend them enough. They're wonderful approaches.
We're about ready to wrap up. I wonder if you had any other final thoughts or ideas. And also tell everybody where they can find out more about you, especially like the musical example we played. If teachers want to purchase that, it's fine to do a commercial. So,
I would be honored. Thank you. You can go to evanhuntermusic.com, just EVAN Hunter Music. You can purchase the sheet music collection there. I hope to have a lot more music up there pretty soon. Right now, it's just that collection. But I'd be honored if you wanted to purchase that for yourself or someone else. Let me know what you thought of it. And for teachers who want to get their students more into composition, or maybe teachers who want to compose more themselves, and you're not quite sure where to start, maybe you don't consider yourself a composer, be curious. Don't be afraid of it. The worst thing that can happen is you hit a sour note, you play something you don't like, and you go, oh, that didn't work. Okay, I guess I'll try something else. You know, nobody's going to get hurt. There's nothing bad is going to happen to you. Just be a kid again. Play with musical Lego blocks again. Don't be afraid to doodle around. Have fun with it.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Evan, it's been great and inspiring, and I really appreciate your time. And just as a reminder to everybody, you can go to thepianosenseiway.com, and we're also on YouTube, which is also The Piano Sensei Way, where I post the video version so you can see our lovely faces and anything else I share visually. So everybody take care and have a great day. Thanks, Evan.
Thank you. We'll be right back.